this too, now peep it. Under B-Boy, yeah, I found Victoria's Secret. My God, I make your head nod when I come through. If it's me you're gonna do, you better work out, fool. So reminisce the Carmel King, you know the Mechadon swing. Give you everything else but the ring. So deja vu, tell you what I'm gonna do when they reminisce over you, my God. Yeah. C.O. Smooth and Mary J. Blige on the ride to reminisce, and it goes like this. Check it on that. Check it on that. Yeah. I feel the funk, baby.
When they reminisce,
I reminisce on my God.
Yeah, Mary J. Blige, C.O. Smooth, Reminisce, featuring Pete Rock. Hey, welcome everyone. This is the Soul Savage Show, coming every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time here on Studio W The Buzz. That's 6 o'clock Central and 7 o'clock on the East Coast. Remember, you can listen live every Thursday. Just simply go to www.studiowbuzz.com. If you have an Android device, just download IMG2 on your Android device anywhere around the globe. Welcome. Hey, this is the Soul Savage Show. Q-Lynn Green, EB, and Whitney. Good evening, everyone.
Hey, what's up? Well, I was about to ask you, what's up with you? You get a little cranky for the past 2 weeks.
That's
how you doing.
Well, I hope it doesn't.
You get snappy with me. The listeners don't know, but we'll be getting snappy with me. I was trying to figure out what's going on.
No.
If we got it.
It's like
a segment for the week.
Yeah, I understand. Oh, yeah, we might have to call it the snappy segment. What am I snapped off about, right? No, but anyway, no, Q-Lynn, okay, since you put it out there, let's talk about it a little bit. Normally you call me. No, you call me 5 minutes before the show. Will, you ready? Okay, all right, okay. So.
Yeah,
because
I'm getting off the interstate. I rush every day getting here because I drive 2 hours from the studio. And then I'm on the phone. I get here at the studio setting up. I'm like, all right, you said 5 minutes till. And then I'm waiting on you. And you like, I'm about to be on in a minute, getting the attitude. I'm like, I'm going to be watching your tone of delivery. We talking. That's all I want to say.
No. Okay. All right. Well, okay. It's the East Coast Central Connection.
I'm sorry, y'all listening. We do this like every week. New listening in. Let's introduce our guest, though. We got to put family business to the side real quick. We got to introduce our guest, that's all. Our guest that's all right now, she's a 20-year music industry vet. She's also a creator of a music sermon. If you follow her on Twitter, you're familiar with this whole, she does amazing Twitter threads about R&B and soul music. And we just gonna get right to it. Naima Cochran, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm well. Thanks for having me. I didn't know I was coming into like some beef. I feel like.
Yeah, it's always beef on the show because we got to like, I call him Puff Daddy Will because he wants to be all up in the, you know, the microphone, you know what I mean, stuff like that.
Oh.
And then he likes beefing with me during the show because I won't let him talk. I don't know what other engineer slash producer that gets their own segment on the show. He has his own
Well, I don't want no enough. Smoke, Will, so, you know.
He's gonna try to put us against each other
because
he likes calling confliction.
No, actually, I'm a very, very nice guy. I'm the best engineer she ever had, but I want to welcome you to the show, so let's give it up.
Yes, we got that in the budget, Naima. Right? You got that.
That's
right. We try to keep the budget good around here, so we get that in there sometimes.
I feel very welcome. Thank you.
I just want to ask you a couple, I guess like a little mini interview to let the listeners know, whether you were in the music industry, what is it in particular that you did in the industry?
Well, for the majority of my career, I was a music marketer on the label side. I worked for Bad Boy, I worked for Arista, I worked for Columbia Records, and I worked for Epic Records, where I was what they call a product manager or a marketing manager, who's basically, you know, they're not that visible to people. People are usually familiar with A&Rs, they're usually familiar with publicists, but the marketing person is actually the person that pulls all the different elements of a project together once there's music ready to go. So they manage the timelines, they manage the photo shoots, the video shoots, the radio singles, the shows, the performances, the budgets, the artwork, and they're the primary liaison between the artist camp and the label. So they're kind of like the in-house manager for the artist. They're like the quarterback of the whole thing. So that's what I've done for the majority of my career. And then for about 2 years, up until earlier this year, I was part of John Legend's management team.
Oh, wow. I was going to ask any particular, like, in the, you started in the like, mid-90s or late-90s?
I started in the late 90s. Before I went to Bad Boy, actually, my first job in entertainment, for those who are familiar with Combat Jack, who passed away last year, he was an entertainment attorney long before, like, before the podcast thing, and I worked at his law firm. I worked for him, because initially I wanted to be an entertainment lawyer, and then I realized that I really loved the energy of the industry, and I loved the lifestyle, and I loved, you know, everything about it, except I wanted to be on the creative side instead of on the legal side. So that's when I started at Bad Boy, originally interning in the A&R department. Then I went to Arista and was in the marketing department, and I got to Arista right when Outkast, Miss Jackson, went to radio. So I worked the Sanctonia album. I worked Usher's 8701 album. I worked Pink's Misunderstood album, the Blue Cantrell album, a few different things. And then when I left Arista, I was doing some consulting for a few years, and then I went to Columbia. And while I was at Columbia, I worked with Mary Mary, Juicy J, Odd Future, Maxwell, John Legend, Beyonce. I'm sure I'm forgetting some people. And that's where my relationship with John started. Then I went to Epic, where I launched the Dinner's project with Classic Man. I worked with Sierra. I worked with Timbaland and a couple, and I worked with, everybody signed under Janelle Monáe's Wonderland label. And then I left and went to work for John. And, earlier this year, with everything that was happening with Music Sermon and some other things I had going on personally, I decided to kind of just leave and devote a little bit more time to my own stuff. So now I consult and advise, and I still do some marketing for various artists, but I just do it more informally.
Oh, wow. That's dope. That was a lot of great information. I was going to ask, what was your, I guess I should say, favorite client to take on, like, favorite, the one where you did all the deadlines and the artwork, like, all the preparing for the album. Like, what was your favorite one out of all those?
Well, you know, I'll say I have two. The one I'm most proud of is a kind of slept-on album that was really ahead of its time that John did with The Roots called Wake Up. And it was the first project I worked on with John. And they did, for those who don't know, they redid a lot of protest songs from, the 60s and the 70s. But it was at the beginning of the Obama administration. So there was still a lot of hope and a lot of upliftment. I think had it come out years later, the climate would have been really different for it. And we had been having conversations about it a lot over the past couple of years. But we just did really good. We just really believed in that album. It was an excellent album. It was nominated for Mad Awards. It won, I think, like 3-4 Grammys. We did really good work around it. And so that's the one I'm most proud of, even today. But my favorite project has to have been Juicy J's Stay Trippy album, which was the album that had Fans and Maker Dance on it, because there were so few people inside my label who really understood Juicy, who understood what Juicy was, who understood what this album was, because Columbia at the time was kind of like a majority white staff. And just sitting in meetings, like the conversations we used to have about like a twerk contest or, you know, playing the unedited version of Bands. And I mean, just everything about it was funny, but we also did some really creative stuff around that. Like we did a video game where you could stream the album, but you could also, like, you were in the video game, you were in a strip club. I think it's still up online somewhere, but I don't remember the link. But you were in a strip club, and you, like, threw money at strippers as they were sliding down the pole, and you had to throw money at them to keep them from sliding all the way down the pole, and you would earn points and level up. Anyway, you would earn points and level up based on throwing money at the strippers and popping champagne bottles and all of this other stuff. So we just did some really good work around it. The album ran for a year, which doesn't happen often. And he had, like, low-key, I think, like, every single went gold or better. So, and for Juicy to have already been in the game as long as he was at that point, it was basically like a career revitalization. So that was my favorite project, I think.
Oh, wow. I was going to go back a little bit. Like, what was it that, like, because you're so, like, in-depth with music and so knowledgeable. What, like got you into doing that as well? Like, before you did music sermons, but, like, just your knowledge of it, like, what made you, like, curious about, like, music in detail?
I grew up in a very musical family, both sides of my family. I grew up in a house where there was always music playing. My father was a jazz musician. He played the saxophone. Well, I shouldn't say he was a jazz musician because he also played R&B. My father was a saxophone player. My uncle was in the Commodores. He wasn't like one of the guys that's on the album cover, but he was in their band. And then he wasn't one of like the main guys, but you can see him. He's in the Brick House video on the drums. But, and then when Lionel went solo, he was a session player on a lot of Lionel stuff. And my father played sax. My grandmother played the piano. On my mom's side of the family, she was a big music lover. We had a lot of musicians on that side of the family too. So I just grew up in a house surrounded by music. All my mom's friends, my dad's friends, and my stepfather, even though he wasn't a musician himself, he was the first genuine audiophile I knew. Like the first person who was truly a collector, who truly listened to music at the highest possible quality and who could break down like, who was playing this? Who was doing that? What was the difference between this recording compression and that recording compression? And what was the difference between this version and that version? And without really even knowing it, I got my knack for curating stories out of music from him, because he would put together a tape for you and like, it would be so well, it'd be so well thought out. He'd have liner notes. You know, we used to be able to get to the store and get like a pack of six blank tapes that you could make yellow and tapes on. And he'd write, like, liner notes in them, you know, all that type of stuff. So,
That's to Maxwell.
Shout out to Maxwell. So, yeah, I grew up around it and absorbed more than I even realized. I absorbed, like, when jazz samples became a big thing in hip-hop, I realized I knew a lot of this music, you know. And then my friends wanted to hang out at my house because, like, my dad had this vinyl collection and all this other stuff. And over the years, I've just come to realize, like, I knew this song. I didn't know I knew this song. I knew this song. I didn't know I knew this song just because I grew up around it. You know, like that Saturday morning music that your parents were playing. And I myself, played the violin. I sang, you know, in my gospel choir, et cetera. So I am in the music field as a professional, but I'm also just a genuine fan. And what I do for music sermon really comes more from the fan side than the professional side. And in fact, I kind of started doing music sermon as an outlet because the business wasn't fun to me anymore. And I was trying to go back to a time when it was exciting and kind of hold on to that nostalgia.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, was it most of your music industry knowledge on that, or was it just your own information that you've gotten over the years of like certain eras of music? You actually answered it for me, so I don't even have to ask.
Yeah. Well, I will say the stuff I talk about with the 90s, because when I first started this, most of what I talked about was 90s. The stuff that I talk about in the 90s is mostly, like, I know it because I lived it. And there are some times, especially when we start getting into the late 90s, where I'm talking, where I'm able to add in some details that I know because I was there or because I know someone else who was close to the, was close to whatever I'm talking about and I have some insight. But there came a point when people were asking me to go back to the 70s or, you know, even back to the early 80s, or go into some other areas, like when I did juke joint music, where I had to start doing research. So now, usually, even if I think I know what I'm talking about, I still go through and do some research just to make sure I have my dates right and sequence of events right and I have my facts right and my details right. So it's definitely not off zone. All of it. A lot of it now is me genuinely doing research and reading up and studying up. So it's doing Music Sermon has actually caused me to grow in my own music knowledge because I've had to research to do some of these sermons.
Oh, wow. You watch, like, documentaries and stuff, too, like, to add on to it?
Yeah, I always watch documentaries and read a lot of articles and all. So that stuff wasn't necessarily new, but now I actually have also sought out some books that are really more damn near textbooks about certain eras of music, like about Soul Train or about a book that I recommend to everybody, The Big Payback, which is about the commercialization of hip hop, which is like the definitive book about how hip hop grew from a niche genre to the mainstream behemoth that we know it to be today. Like, you really could teach a class off of it. So I've just started, like, reading more myself just to be more informed. And now I also do some writing for some different outlets as well. So yeah, it's a little bit of everything. I pull knowledge from a little bit of every place, but I do love reading about music.
Yeah, I read your music sermons, and I actually, like, read all of them, because usually Twister is just like, it's too long, but you write stuff that I actually, like, care about, like, in terms of, like, R&B and soul music, so I was like, alright, I'll look at this whole thing. But then some of them that be doing them, they be messing up the years and stuff. I'm like, did y'all research this for y'all? Did they put out, like, something like, I forgot who was, I ain't gonna say the name or whatever, but it was like that song Coffee Brown After Party. I was like, yeah. It was like in 95. I was like, wait, no.
Oh, no, that's
like,
didn't come out till the 2000s. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I was in middle school, that's all I came out. I was like, what is this? and then they just kept making me, and I was like, you gotta be on your toes as well. I'm a music journalist too, so I'm like, wait, no. Cause I was like, of age when they came out. This is not 95. Yeah. But yours is like, real accurate.
Right.
If y'all follow on Twitter, N-A-I-M-A, Twitter threads are amazing. But, Whitney, you got any questions? We can fix and go to break real quick so we can get all this in. Whitney, you got any questions for her before we go to break?
No, you covered quite a bit. I was just sitting here enjoying, like, listening to everything. Like, very, very interesting.
Right. I think I only had one question. What you think about, like, people, they say neo, so, cause I think I've interviewed at least, three of them that, like Bilal and Marsha Ambrosia and people like that they put that title on. I don't like it because I feel like it puts them in a box and it's like, oh, that's neo. So like, it's not like taken seriously as a genre. And I don't think it's a genre because none of their music was the same to me. Like, you can say like a vibe, like it was like sort of the Vendor Road, that piano driven song and stuff like that, but it was all like eclectic, like with Erykah Badu and stuff like that. So what do you think about neo? So, cause most of them told me, Bilal told me, he said somebody called his music neo, so he said he's gonna cuss you out. So, what do you think about that?
Bilal must find himself cussing a lot of people out then. I mean, here's the thing. When the term neo soul started, it was necessary because.
Right.
Neo soul was a reaction. Like, so the four first official quote unquote neo soul artists were Erica Maxwell, D'Angelo, and Lauren, right? And the term was necessary because at the time, we were coming off of before hip hop soul, R&B was like R&B. It was like what we now consider like an old school feel R&B.
Yeah, just instrumentation.
But it was like big voices, big ballads, big melodies, you know. And then came New Jack Swing, and then came hip hop soul. So new neo soul wasn't even reaching back to an 80s feel. It was reaching back to a 70s feel. So it wasn't even like we're reverting back to what R&B sounded like in 1990, which was like Stephanie Mills, Regina Bell, you know, Anita Baker. It was going back to like the 70s with like a funk infused, jazz infused. So there was a need to call it something other than R&B. So I understand, or just like straight R&B. So I understand that, because it was like, we're giving you this old soul feel, not like recent soul, but not R&B, but soul feel, but we're giving it to you in a new way. But what then happened was, in the early 2000s, that started to become a catch-all term just for any kind of R&B that was vibey. Cause like, for example, Carl Thomas is pretty straightforward R&B. John Legend is pretty straightforward R&B. Alicia is pretty straightforward R&B, but because they have like instrumentation and, you know, because they aren't hip hop soul, they fell under the neo soul category. When they weren't necessarily neo soul artists. So I can understand how some people feel away about it. And like my mom, after I did the neo soul, sermon, she was asking me about it, because she was like, I always thought of Jill Scott as a jazz artist, because my mom sees Jill Scott at jazz festivals. You know, she was like, I thought of him as a jazz artist, because now a lot of those neo soul, a lot of music that we used to call neo soul is now for a lot of people considered like a smooth jazz type of situation. So I do, you know, and the term went out of usage by mid-2000s, but some people still use it for lack of another way to describe it. I just think we have limited language for how we describe our music, because it doesn't just feel like R&B, but it's not quite all the way jazz, but it's not just straight soul, although I guess maybe Bilal just wants to be known as a soul artist, because he's not an R&B artist, you know? So I get why people use it. People use it because they don't have other language to use, but I also get why people think it's being used too broadly. I don't know if that answer made sense.
It did. I just wanted the industry sort of perspective, because I knew it was like a music industry coin term, like a new jazz
thing.
Yeah,
and
stuff.
A minute, it really was, even like, there was like, it was an actual classified genre. Like, you can go into a music store and you can find a neo soul section.
Oh, yeah.
You can't do that anymore. And the executive who coined it came up with the phrase to describe Erica, because he didn't have another way to describe Erica, and it caught on. So it was very much an industry-created phrase, but it was created specifically for Erica, and then it just, by a year later, it had become like a subgenre.
Right, exactly. I remember from what I, because I asked Maxwell this, I remember going to shows and backstage and asking him that, and he was saying, I think he already, it's already like public knowledge this, but they had shelved, Columbia shelved his first album, but it wasn't until like D'Angelo's Brown Sugar came out, that's when they were like, oh, okay, we can sell this album with D'Angelo, like we could define it like a Brown Sugar album, whatever. And he was like, yeah, it was like that. But I just thought neo soul, like, it's just the word choice that bothers me. It's like neo.
Right.
It wasn't, it means new. I'm like, it's not new soul, because like you said, 70s instrumentation inspired and just different fusions. I'm like, all of them are different, because I'm a musician and I listen to it. I'm like, there's different things, so some of them got percussion on it, like congos and just different sounds or whatever, like, Erykah Badu started using wind instruments in her instrumentation. Like, it's just all different kind of eclectic sounds in there. I'm like, what?
Right.
You know what I mean? To just, like, make a broad brush. But yeah, that was it. I just, everybody know, I wish EB was on. He out promoted his, album.
That's what I'm saying. Where's Eric?
He's promoting his album called I Go to Church But I Smoke Weed. That's what he's doing. He's part-time Uber as well. So.
He's
just, I like cracking jokes on EP
know,
when he's gone.
I want you to know I'm highly offended, Eric, that you are not here when I'm here.
Yes, let him know. Tell him again so he can know.
That's
right.
Awful. Like, how do you not do that? Like, to me, because
yeah,
Eric,
and he said he was going to, right, he said he was going to text you back Tuesday because he said he was unsure. And then he's
right.
Like, he's going to text me back. And then he's like, nah, I've called you out, EB, right? Live on the radio right now.
Like, I called Eric my brother in Twitter music ministry. Like, I'm really upset that you're not here, Eric, but whatever.
Right, exactly. We'll get you back on when he's on. I think he's busy with something. I think it was something important. But we're going to be right here. We're going to go to break real quick. And when we'll be back, we'll do a quick savvy update, and then we'll get into the raggedy and savvy news when we get back from break. So if Will's ready, we'll go break real quick. We'll be back. Hot sex on the bottom. Hot sex on the bottom. She say your name. Hot sex on the bottom. 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 Hey yo, who wanna put a fight for a long time? No hear from suckers walking around talking about they can get some, but that vibe is not sniper. No can do. And if you take out for dope, then ask the other two, and I'll proceed to let you know exactly how to flow. I'm not a law doctor, so just cycle with the hoe. Oops, my mistake, I didn't know you went with her. Should I run down the line of all the kids that done hit her? Don't be bitter. I hear that honey resembles a critter. Heard she likes it 2-1-1 like my man John Ritter. But back to the subject, you can't catch wreck. You must give respect to earn respect. Suckers think they can hurt me, cause now it's best. You're full of jokes. Well, yo, your name ain't flex. I got the riches, the riches. I'm lost like a Huxtable. You think you're all that, but your girl's quite doable. Yeah, I'm telling you, G, to back above me. I'm not a man called Hawk, but I ain't Mr. Softy. Rapping is an art coming straight from the heart. So forget the chalk, because the action got stars.
Where you at? To all my people with the funk, I'm the undercover brother, dump in the trunk. Save all the sad songs and the tear jerkers. Take a step back, it's the lyrical worker. The points that I create ain't in paperback books. The points that I create are for hookers and the crooks. My mental is excelling cause I dabble in the books. I'm not the one to front on, so sub-ups. Yo, I guess the pickings, I'm such a damn dickens. If you step to this, then the block just thickens. I run you around the track like a bunny and a dog. To me, you're just another MC on the log. A link in the chain, fluid on the brain. I boast the pipe lyrics, and yours are mundane. See, I can't maintain, especially if you come back. I'm the lyrical master blaster, yeah, I could do that. I could also do your girl, so leave the boo at home. Cause when I get done, I have the strong on bones. It's the no-joke pressure that elevates my mind. Make me pick up and go when it's time to drop my rhymes. My title is Rock, the abstract poetic. I'm in the idle mode, but my energy's kinetic. So smooth and debonair, special for the air. Gotta keep my thing in gear, cause it's evident and clear that I will rock.
Hot sex on the bottom,
Yes, A Tribe Called Quest. A Hot Sex here on Studio W, The Buzz, your global radio network, and welcome back to the Soul Savage Show. Q-Lin, that was too funny. Evie's promoting his new album.
Yeah, his new album. He got a new album. It's called I Go to Church, but mostly that's
too funny. That's too funny.
And then his hot new single that's out now is called Fishnet Comedy as well.
That's funny.
I think I can order that on Spotify or something like that. I think it's on Google Play or something. I think it's on all digital outlets actually. But yeah. I was playing around. We get to savvy updates real quick. My week's been, the past, last month was crazy. I had so much. I had a month long, corporate gig contract I did. It was actually, A Tribe Called Quest song. I did it at a show. Man, I'll tell you, man, Caucasian people love A Tribe Called Quest. You play that at any setting and it just goes anywhere, but. Last week I did a jazz festival in Dallas, a Riverfront jazz festival. Then the week after that, I went to LA for a Hollywood Bowl, did that, and then, did that whole month. And then they're on the show, we interviewed Chef Crawford, Charlie Burrell, and, Selena Johnson's manager, Dr. Celicia Thompson. That was a busy month we had, but yeah, we had fun. What did you do, Whitney, this week? Do you have anything going on?
Nothing in particular. Yeah, I mean, other than that, I finally Well, yeah, I do work a lot, but I've been getting back into a good, like, writing rhythm, finally, like, finally getting to that point. So, trying to wrap up some stuff to get it posted for next week, hopefully.
Yes, y'all, she's writing and then also trying to move up in the 1% tax bracket. I'm not mad at it.
I mean, you gotta put your money, you gotta have stuff in multiple baskets.
Right, exactly. Naima, what'd you do this week? What'd you have going on?
This week I was kind of a little lost based on the holiday Monday. It threw me off. Like, I'm still not quite in acceptance.
Today is
Thursday. But, you know, the biggest thing for me this week was obviously the Bobby Brown story.
On a
personal note. And I know we're going to talk about that a little bit. But, yeah, just trying to come to terms with the fact that the summer's over. But I actually have a lot of travel coming up over the next month. So I've been putting a lot of final plans in place for that because I leave New York on Saturday and I'm not back for about 2 weeks. So I got just a lot of stuff to do before I get out of here.
Yeah, mentally prepared. I got mentally prepared for every travel I do because it's like I really I'll like
mentally prepared and like what errands I got to run.
Right, exactly. That's me all day. I'm like, what do I have to do before it's time for me to travel? That's it. And then get all that done. And then I pack my bags. People don't like packing. People wait till last minute. But I can't wait till last minute to pack. Because I'm already over places. Then I got to worry about getting to the airport and doing all that stuff. Getting through the airport is already a hassle. Unless you got the, which I just finally got, where you just walk, go through TSA,
the pre-check?
Whatever. Don't have to go through that. Yeah. And, oh my God. It's just a struggle. So I try to get everything done and get it done. But yeah, that's how I do it too. But. Yeah, I think I keep forgetting to announce this. Soul Savage Radio Show will be live in Oklahoma City September 28th. I'm getting ready. The reason why it's taking me so long because I got graphics for the promotion and, it's mostly on my end because I've been busy. I've been out of town for like all month. Last month. So I haven't had time to get that all together, but we're getting ready. My graphic team's getting ready to get the promotional stuff together. So. We're getting ready to promote that. It should be a jam-packed show. It's at the Ice Event Grill Center in Oklahoma City. I should have more details on it very soon. I think next week I should have some more details. But, yeah, y'all be on the lookout for that. Yeah, man, it's our first live show, so that's pretty fun. I think we're interviewing a couple people there. It's comedians. I think comedians coming on, and then also the owner of the Ice Event Grill Center. He's had, like, a whole bunch of people that come to his venue, like Kelly Price, Kiki White. He gets everybody there. So it'd be fun to ask him questions and all that stuff. He's a pretty cool cat. But, we're going to go right into Raggedy News. We have quite a bit of it, of everything, but we just going to run through it. Raggedy News, the first one, I just saw this online. I was trying to pull up the story. It was actually a 911 operator. It was a video that surfaced of a 911 operator talking on the phone with a caller that somebody was, her friend of hers was, dying, and she was calling the 911 to assist her and stuff like that. And so, did y'all hear or did y'all read about that story?
I don't think I heard about that one.
Me neither.
Yeah, basically, he was trying to ask, he kept asking her, was he breathing? And she was like, you can hear her saying in the audio, like, she's trying to get him to breathe and keep his eyes open and stuff because he was dying. And she's like, keep taking breaths and stuff like that. And so she's talking to her friend and then talking to the operator, and he keeps asking the question. And she's like, I told you he's barely breathing. She just kept saying that. And then he asked it again, and she got frustrated and was like, didn't I just tell you that effing tell you, we can't cuss that much on here. Now, I'm trying, he gave me an 8-word cuss word limit, so I'm trying
got
to
it.
Cuss
much.
It's five. Okay. Five-word cuss limit.
No, you said eight. Whitney gave me hers, so I got eight.
That's true.
See? Told you. But anyway, getting back to the sport. The operator basically got mad because the lady got an attitude with him, and he hung up on her. Wow. And then the boy, her friend died in the process of all that.
I do actually think I heard about this, but I didn't look too deeply into it. And I think isn't the 911 operator is under investigation now, right?
Right, exactly. Yep. It just updated the story. They said he is. I'm not sure if they suspended him yet, but they definitely said that he's getting investigated for his other phone calls to see if he's been doing the same thing with other callers. But yeah, that was mad raggedy. I was like, dude, like, this is your job. And then I saw people commenting saying that, well, this is a hard job. Like, they're saying stuff they say when police officers, like, shoot somebody black. They say the same thing.
Right.
Like, oh, they got a hard time. Like, why would you be a phone call operator? That's like with any customer service. Like, you're servicing somebody. Like,
right. And that's even more important because it's literally life or death. And mm-hmm. these people are trained for this, you know?
Yeah, I just thought that was mad wreck. And the fact that he died because he didn't assist them, like he didn't send a unit or anybody out there, ambulance, anybody to go check on him, like he died in the accident. So that could be like some kind of like, a lawsuit or something like that against him for doing that. But yeah, it was a male 911 operator that did that. Whitney, what do you think about that before we move on?
No, that's just crazy. And, like, that's not the first time that that's happened. There's multiple stories like that. Like, I wonder if they check calls periodically, like once a week, or, like, look at that. Like, I feel like there should be a way to prevent some of this. Like, but that's just crazy. I feel so bad for that family.
Right. That was definitely not encouraging to read that. I was like, wow, it's really no. people out there that have jobs. Like, I'm just trying to figure out why would you sign up for a job like that if you got, like, sensitive feelings with the way somebody, like, this is, like, if anything, I wouldn't know how to react to somebody. Like, if somebody I knew that was dying, like, right in front of me, and how frantic I would be, like, how calm I would be, like, everybody's different. So to expect somebody to give in, like, this is, like as immediate as you're supposed to be. And you're over here worrying about how she's saying it to you. Like, that's ridiculous to me. But you go to, I put the pastor that eulogized Aretha's homegoing service, I put him in Raggedy News. I watched it.
As he said,
I was trying to pull up his comment because he just said something. He just had some kind of press conference. I don't know if it was today or yesterday, but I just saw the article. But I watched the whole thing, and, like, I just was like, as soon as he's got to, I don't even know where it was, but it was when he started talking about, it was when he said something about Black Lives Matter. When he got to talking mm-hmm. like that, I checked out, like, immediately.
Yeah. He was talking about black-on-black crime and saying that black lives shouldn't matter. Literally said that black lives didn't matter until, because I was trying to pull it up, too. Saying black lives didn't matter
right.
until we address black-on-black crime, which I think what happened with Jackson Williams, first of all, he's a very old-school preacher, clearly, right? And
right.
he eulogized Aretha's father and eulogized Aretha's family. I don't know how well he actually knew Aretha. I think the family said that he was selected basically because of tradition, because he eulogized Pastor Theo Franklin, her father, siblings. Was this man
yeah.
realized he was going to have a national platform and had an opportunity to, like, get a little bit of light and get his messaging out there? Because at no point during that eulogy did he actually eulogize Aretha. He talked more about her father than he talked about her. And
exactly.
when he talked about mm-hmm. her, it was in the abstract, and then he just went left. And the thing is about that message, there are people... I saw even some black people being like, oh, y'all just ain't ready to hear the truth. And the thing, and this is how I know they're full of crap, because even if you take the fact that it was a trash message out of it, it was just bad preaching. Like, it was bad preaching. Like, it was inconsistent. He was all over the place. He went for 45 minutes, which is way too long.
Yes.
And he had clearly lost the crowd and just kept going. Then he shouted, like, black people, you know, gay need to respect the straight, and the straight need to respect the gay,
man.
And the Democrats need to respect the Republicans, and the Republicans need to respect. And it's like, man, what are you even talking about right now? He was just, I think he was thinking he might be able to get a little bit of white man's check or something. Ooh. Like, maybe he could get some Fox News looks or something. But it was just, it was bad. And obviously the family has condemned his eulogy as well.
I got it pulled up from the New York Post. Has it written about it. It says Reverend Jasper Williams told the Associated Press in a phone interview that he felt his sermon was appropriate at Franklin's funeral Friday in Detroit. Let me see. It says, oh, here's his actual statement. It says, I was trying to show that the movement now is moving and should move in a different direction. What we need to do is create respect among ourselves. Aretha is the person with that song, Respect, that is laid out for us, and what we need to be as a race within ourselves. We need to show each other that. We need to show each other respect. That was the reason why I did it. And no. I'm trying to see if it says something.
Wow.
Right, all of this is. Yeah, it's like this whole, I think that was his own statement. I think he had a press conference. It was a full video they had posted on there. He had addressed it some more. But, yeah, this whole statement is trash. I don't know how many times on the show, I think Will has said it, like, multiple times about these preachers. And I feel like he embodies, like, everything that I say about what's wrong with the church and tradition. Because they love to point out, these kind of preachers love to point out what's wrong with everybody else. But I'm like, you're the problem with church. Like, y'all ideology of how somebody is supposed to be is wrong, period. Traditional, right. I think, and I saw somebody on Twitter say, like, traditionalism is what's killing the church, and that's what it is. Like, all these, I mean, I feel like, well, not saying they can't have rules in the church, but I'm just saying in terms of, like, how somebody's supposed to live, anything that's not pertaining to, like, church attire and stuff like that, like, I can respect that. Like, things that you're supposed to do in that particular church, I'm with. But when you talk about, like, when preachers start getting on their whole, I say they need to get, like, preachers like this need to get podcasts instead of getting licensed to minister. Because you just talking from what you feel like. Like, that's not what the Bible says. And everything you say contradicts what the Bible says. And that's what's so funny about it. It's like pastors like that, they just go off of what they feel, and then they try to act like that's Bible. I don't even know if he had a text or a title in his whole message. Did he go to the Bible anytime during the sermon?
No, I
didn't hear no Bible references.
And that was what was crazy. When he started, because, you know, this was the other reason I said it was bad preaching. He started with a sermon topic, which was about connecting Aretha as the Queen of Soul to the soul of the church, right? That was way different than where he landed. But the way he started, it made it seem like he was about to give us, like, some really good preaching. Like, he had some etymology. Right. I think he may have pulled some scripture out in the beginning. And then suddenly he evoked, I think he may have, I might be wrong. But then suddenly he evoked CL, he brought CL into it, Aretha's father. Then he started talking about the home, and that's when it started going left. Because he was talking about there not having been a mother in the home because Aretha's mom died when she was 10. And CL making some mistakes, and then that's when it went left to, something being lacking, and then all of a sudden it turned into a single woman not being able to raise a man. And Aretha Franklin only had boys, by the way.
Sure.
It just all went really, really left, really, really fast. And I found myself kind of checking out because I was like, what's happening? And even from inside the church, like Roland Martin tweeted that everybody was really confused. And I was just kind of like, what is even going on? And then I heard him get to the black-on-black crime thing, and I was like, oh, see, no, I can't even. And I just kind of stopped listening at that point. But it was, I had secondhand embarrassment for him and for everybody in the church, though, because I was in my house and I felt awkward. So I can only imagine how it must have felt in the energy of the sanctuary and for her family to, like, sit here and just watch this man rant over something that has nothing to do with Aretha.
Right. Is that, like, to me, like, oh my God, like, he's just, like, I'm like, you're so out of touch with reality. I'm like, this sermon, like, you could literally place this, like, in any era, and they would think it's relevant. Like, I just kind of, like, pastors like this, and, like, old black folks like this that think that black people are living in, like, a 1990 John Singleton movie or something. Like this life. I just hate, like, they try to make it so intensified, like, the black community's at risk. Like, no, it's not. Like, oh, my God. It's just funny to me, like, how out of touch of reality, like, these pastors are. Like, he might as well just say, y'all need to pull your pants up and stop wearing earrings. That's the same equivalent, like, old traditional message that gets lost with me. Like anybody, excuse me, that preaches like this, I ain't going to the church at all. I'll actually boycott it. I'll be like outside protesting or something. Like, why do y'all listen? And I should have known something then when he had that invisible mustache, because I have these unproven theories. Like, I trust people that don't have mustaches, and then I don't trust people with beady eyes. And he had an invisible mustache, and then he also had beady eyes. I'm like, see that? That's why it's an unproven science theory. I just feel like people with beady eyes can't be trusted. I just feel like that's the thing. And I stick with it. I don't feel like I've ever been wrong on that. Like, I feel like I'm bad. The batting average on that is pretty high. I'm just saying. Just something like observant that I, like, beady eyes, if you got shifty eyes, if you got a tangled eye, like sticky fingers, like if you got something like that going on, I don't trust you. But yeah, this pastor was in, is just straight up raggedy. And so, yeah, we're going to talk more about the homegoing, Aretha's homegoing service later, but we're going to get to, I think this is the last raggedy news topic. Fox News shaming, that's what they basically did. Somebody at Trader Joe's, I think, what was it, New Jersey?
Yeah, where he in was New working Jersey. At,
mm-hmm. Yes.
In Clifton, right. New Jersey, I think? Yeah.
Yes, I believe so. Yes, and he was working there. And so somebody took it upon themselves to take a picture of him, and Fox News got a hold of it, ran the story, and basically was trying to shame this man because he had a job. I'm like, to me, I'm like, what was the big deal? Like, that was my first initial thought. Like, why is this a news, like,
right.
Why is this a headline? Like, this is ridiculous.
Go ahead. Well, I was
going
to say, you know, Jeffrey Owens, which is his real name, who we all know is Eldon from the Cosby Show.
Yes.
First of all, he was a tertiary character, like not even a main supporting character, but like a tertiary character on the show. Mm-hmm. The show's been over since 1992. Like, even in syndication, how much money y'all really think he's getting off Cosby checks? Like, of course, obviously. And if you think about it, you haven't seen him on a whole lot of TV roles. He does a lot of theater. But obviously he's not, you know, been on another TV series except for maybe some supporting roles here and there. But like, yeah, he has a job. Like, actors have to work when they're not acting. But I really did love the way that Twitter in general, and like after Twitter, if that's such a thing, and just regular Twitter, like, showed up. Like, nah, y'all right. not gonna play my man. Like, there's really nothing wrong with this. And not for nothing, like, Trader Joe's give health insurance for part-time employees. Like, it's yeah. worth working there just for that. Y'all know how much health insurance costs? You know, it's just the fact that it was...
Exactly. Amen to that.
Right. It was two sisters who did it. It was two black women who did it, which pisses me off. And Fox running with it, which is the same people who's always complaining that black people trying to get over on the system and need to work and do all this other stuff. The fact that she's trying to embarrass a man for working... It's like, come
all
on,
Labor
man.
Day weekend, too.
Yeah. Like, it's awful. Yep. But I love the response and the support that he's gotten. You know, he was on Good Morning America. Like, he's been able to tell his side of the story. It's also made Trader Joe's look really good because, you know, people have been talking about what a great place it is to work and all this other stuff. So I think it turned out for the good for him. And Tyler Perry offered him a job, I think, on the Haves and Have Nots. But, yeah, it was, like you said, it was like, why was it a thing in the first place? Hello? Did we lose her?
I guess so. That's weird.
Well, are you there?
Yes, I am here. I posted some stuff on my social media pages and my phone is crashing because it's like all of them are coming in at the same time and I need to turn these notifications off. Sorry about that.
Oh.
Phone is crashing while we on air. Sorry about that. But I missed completely the end of what you said. What else did you say on that? Or who left off, because I missed it.
No, I was saying you were right that it shouldn't have been a big deal in the first place.
Okay. Yeah, man, Fox was in Ragged News. I think it was Amanda Seals I saw on her Instagram page. She said, y'all need to figure out how to get celebrities' names right in their passing before y'all start shaming people. Like, you know, like switching, like putting Patti LaBelle's picture in the back of Aretha Franklin's like, what? Like, you gotta, y'all can't get
white people.
Right, exactly. I was like, y'all, man, Fox News, they stay in raggedy news because they just, that whole network is just the ensemble of trash and wickedness. That's all it is. But yeah. I actually moved forward to savvy news. I put Jeffrey Owens, the actor, in there for the online support. Actually Twitter for that online support of Jeffrey Owens, like, that was like amazing. Like how everybody came, like you said, everybody coming together and, just praising working people, just from janitors, nurses, like everybody that works, and actors that have to go between jobs, and then also actors sharing their stories, and musicians, like everybody in the entertainment industry, telling stories of like having to take on so many jobs. And I'm like, I relate to that 100%. Like, you know how many jobs you have to, especially in 07, 08, a lot of people in the entertainment industry understand, I think worldwide, like the recession that happened, like I think work was scarce for everybody. So I definitely was on the end of that. Like when the checks was coming in and then they stopped and you got to figure out, you got to start from basically ground zero. Like you start out making money and then you got to go back to getting a regular. I had, and then also like I had a restaurant. I worked like 3 to 4 different jobs while I was a working musician. Just cause you have to do that. Like in between stuff. Like while you waiting on stuff, like waiting on gigs and stuff like that, you gotta have like multiple jobs, you know, to keep, you know, you gotta pay
you gotta pay for some health care. I'm pretty sure Jeffrey got some kids. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And also, Jeffrey's almost 60. Like, okay, so he works part time. Like, what? I'm just baffled again that this was like a big deal. Like, let that man live.
Right, exactly. And I like that Tyler Perry, and then he was also on Good Morning America, Roberts interviewed him, and he was so honorable, like what he was saying was so honorable. He's like, this story's gonna pass, but I hope that we get out of this is like how important labor is from anybody that works, and nobody's job is more superior than the next person's job. And that's why I always, not to get on some political rant, but that's why I can't stand I think during that election, I think it kind of showcased everybody when Bernie Sanders was running his campaign and he was like, his whole thing was getting minimum wage workers $15 an hour. And I saw all these people saying they don't need to make that much, like their kids. I'm like, do you not know it's like somebody's mama, grandmother, auntie that works at these kind of jobs? Because I used to work in restaurants and that's mostly who was there. Most of the kids didn't work until nighttime. I'm talking about like all day people working 12, 14 hours just to, you know what I mean, make rent and stuff like that. And I just feel like it's some sort of superior complex people have with people that have jobs. And they have like the superiority, like, oh, I make this much money an hour, so you can't make that much because you do this kind of work. I'm like, but yeah, I just always frown upon people like that. And them always the people that don't tip when they go to restaurants. Like they got all these extravagant needs. Like, they're, like, demands and stuff, and then they don't tip. Like, it's them kind of people that, like, really irk me when they make statements like that. Like, oh, you don't need to make this much money and all that other stuff. But not to get on a rant, but I just liked that Tyler Perry reached out and on Twitter. I think he actually confirmed it. I think Jeffrey Owens, he said he didn't have Twitter. And so I guess word got out that he found about that. And then I think they actually are making moves for him to go to Atlanta to his recording studio, like he got to go make the album. Tyler Perry Studios, he's going there in Atlanta.
Yeah.
He's getting ready to tape his own show, the own Oprah Winfrey Network show. I think it's called Have and Have Not. I'll watch it. It's like some auntie show or whatever. I don't watch that, but that'd be a good look for him to get on that. And then he says that his phone keeps ringing. So the evilness of what they try to do, you know, the universe says, I'm going to give you something good. And so, because he seems like a righteous cat. So, I like when people like that get opportunities. You know what I mean? So, I thought that was cool. Of the internet to rally around him and support. I thought that was dope. And then, Colin Kaepernick, Nike sponsorship ad. He just signed on an 8-year deal with them. So, I don't know how much money. I think they enclosed like how much he's making, but that's a lot of money. For him to get 8 years, he got a lot of zeros behind it. I just thought that was cool. And then this, we should have actually put these, I call them saltines, the Satanists, Saltine Satan is burning their Nikes and stuff. We should put them in rag.
They're so stupid.
Stupid news.
They are doing so much.
Like, they burning their Nikes with them all. Like, what?
Yes.
Who bought this? What sense does that make? I always have to find
out. Why do you have the shoes on? Burning them on your feet. That is the dumbest thing. Like, people are really hurting themselves behind it. Somebody here in Oklahoma, in this town, Bartlesville, they stuck theirs in a container with some lighter fluid, set it on fire. Well, then the fire jumps to the walls in the garage.
Wow.
That then moves to the home. The house is burned down. I'm like, are you serious? Are you serious? You mad? Oh, you thought she was mad. You really mad now? Now you ain't got a house.
Yep.
What is this? That's crazy. But good for Kaepernick. Like I'm happy for him.
Me too.
Yeah.
Apparently Nike's been paying Colin for a while. Colin's sponsorship has been going on for some time. They just weren't sure how they were going to utilize him. And it's the 30th anniversary of Just Do It, which is what this whole campaign is about. So this was when they finally decided to, like, come out. And I think it was the perfect time.
Oh, man, that's so great for him. But, yeah, them people, man, I was like, y'all, it's just, I was trying to find logic. It's just impossible to find logic behind racist people. It's like, y'all don't know how to protest. Like, racist people don't know how to protest. Like, you bought these products, and then you burn them. What, you already paid for it, so you already contributing to Colin Kaepernick's success with this campaign by buying it, and you like, oh, I'm gonna cut my Nike shorts. You already bought them. Like, what is going on? It's just amazing to me. Like, and then you go, and then also I just read earlier today, Ford is behind this whole thing. They're supporting NFL players protesting and kneeling. They said we're behind it. It's their right to do that. So now the race. I saw somebody on Twitter say, "What the race is gonna drive?" I thought that was funny because they races. They love them an F-150. That's what all racist people drive is F-150. They love them the big old Ford truck. I forgot they got some kind of jingle for it. It's some old country ass redneck jingle for Ford, but they definitely gonna be mad about that when Ford.
Yeah, the Ford thing apparently the Ford statement apparently actually happened last year, but now that it's back on the radar, coupled with this Colin thing, I'm ready to see what idiot is going to set his F-150 on fire.
Right, exactly. Like, it's going to go viral. It's going to be on air. Like, oh, yes, another idiot. Like, I just don't get it. I'm like, God, I don't even want to say God bless y'all because y'all just idiots. Like, y'all need to let somebody parallel park over y'all head with an F-150 Ford truck. Like, that's what y'all need to do. Get out the truck and let somebody get in there and parallel park around your head because you're stupid. But, yeah, we're going to go on to Aretha Franklin's homegoing service. It was, I don't know the exact, I think it was around, what was it, seven hours long?
Eight.
Wow. I was being generous with the sevens because I was wanting to say nine because it felt like a full-time job watching that. I watching it after, because I was like, man, I got to go get something to eat. And I was like, I got to run two errands. And it took me all day to do that. And it was like, I had so much, it was my downtime. I was like, okay, I'm going to get all this done. And then come back. When I came back, it was like Bill Clinton talking, and then I left again. And then I think I saw, what was it, Shirley Caesar started singing when I came. I was like, wow, this is like an all-time job right here. I think somebody had a video of them, like, I forgot what the video, I think it's Lexi Television. She got this video of, like, having snacks. She's like, my blood pressure is low. My blood sugar is low. And she's sitting there eating snacks in the in the sanctuary. I was like, that is hilarious.
Yes,
I hope they had plates.
Day.
I hope they had a chicken plate or something for any of
them. They had a repast after, but I heard that they didn't eat after the service.
God bless those musicians, though. The organ, the organ.
I mean,
they were sitting up there.
There were a couple of times I saw them get up and come back. I saw that happen a couple times. I'm sure they went and got a little nod. There was probably a green room in the back. But I heard that repast, like the food wasn't served until almost 10 o'clock.
I saw one lady, it was a picture that went viral of this lady. Her hair was knocked back. She was knocked out. Like, she was getting the best
sleep
of her life.
Oh, yeah, she was good and sleep. That was boring. That was during Justin. That picture was from during the eulogy, actually. That was during Justin Williams' eulogy.
Yeah, that was the perfect time to fall asleep was on him because he wasn't talking about that. But somebody, I saw somebody on the internet, they said they need to check to see if they need to put her in the casket with Aretha. I'm not dying laughing. That was
Stop.
People, I think, yeah, they need to check on the people that had diabetes. They had to check their sugar. You know, they got to eat around the clock. I was like, hopefully
that's true.
They had stuff for that. So, but yeah, the whole service, man, what was irking me though, it was like some people acting like this, like wanting to be American Idol judges and judging all the people. I'm like, can y'all just watch? Like, this is a funeral. Like, you're not supposed to be, like, so happy, like at a funeral. Like, they, of course, like, you're going to hear voice cracking. You're not going to hear everything on pitch because they probably, for one, I know a few of them was nervous. I know Chaka Khan said she was nervous, and there was a lot of different singers on there that was nervous. So I just can't understand. I kind of put looking on Twitter because they was getting on my nerves with that, like, trying to judge everybody.
The sound was kind of jacked up, though. I mean, I get the judging because people expected this to be, like, the all-time singingest funeral of all time, but some of it wasn't the artist. It was actually, like, that sound wasn't great. Like, the Clark sisters.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't. Right.
And when they threw the Twinkie, who was at the piano, Twinkie Clark.
They may be fired for that. How the sound engineer ain't ready for Twinkie? What?
Yeah.
Y'all rehearsed this and everything.
Levels wasn't right. So, yeah, some of that was the sound. But I was laughing.
Yeah, right, exactly. And then I was laughing when... I was saying, I was laughing when Layla Hathaway tweeted, she was like, I think the sound engineer is the bass, because when her son was singing, like, that's all I heard was the bass player. And then looked online and she said that, I was dying laughing. I was like, that's 100% true. Because that's all I heard at a certain point was just him. But go ahead, what was you about to say?
No, I was just going to say, the other thing is, like, some of those artists are getting old, you know? Like, Ron Isley's in his 70s, Smokey pushing 70, Shirley pushing 80, if she's not in her 80s already. So I think when we think of a lot of these people, even some of the speakers, like thinking about President Clinton, how frail he looked, or thinking about the fact that, you know, Jesse has Parkinson's now. One of the things that stood out to me about the service with some of these people was like you're really seeing how they've aged. And really realizing that, you know, time marches on. But I think for some of these vocalists, even though, you know, Fantasia did her thing, Jennifer Hudson did her thing, and it was still an incredible service, I think some of us were expecting like full power from maybe like records we've heard or something like that. And it's just, again, first of all, the sound was a little janky, but secondly, like, they're getting up there, you know?
Yep. I enjoyed most of it, though.
Morning. I did, too. I absolutely did.
I think it was only two that I was like, because they were, like, the younger artists, like Ariana Grande. I didn't like their song choice. Like, this is how I know. Like, I try to give them, like, the young artists, like her, like, chances, because she's still growing with her vocal ability and her knowledge of music. And it's like, I could tell you young because you going with the easy, like, sing-along. Like, that's not appropriate, like church song, like to sing at a funeral. Like, sing, like, one of her
but
classic
But I'm pretty sure it wasn't
song.
Her
don't
choice.
Don't sing that.
But I don't think that was her choice. I'm pretty sure the family told them what to sing. I doubt that.
Oh, yeah,
you're
like,
right.
Like,
I'm going to sing that song, you know?
Yeah, them family, I don't know what it was. I was like, I couldn't exactly hear her.
Able to kill a church, like, is Ariana gonna, cause they were singing, the church songs that were sung were old school church songs. I don't really know if I'm trying to have Ariana sing, like, I will wear a crown. You know what I mean? Like, let her, you know, faith comes from the white church, so that's cool. She a country girl. She can put a little something on it. You know,
you're right now. I guess that was safe, but I need her to project more with her voice. Like, even with the sound quality, like with her in general, I can't understand her. Like, not even just like the way people say they can't understand rappers and with that. Like, I literally can't understand her. What she be saying?
Because of all her runs and stuff.
Yeah, nasal. Like, she's so nasally and she doesn't project loud enough. Like, I don't think she uses her full voice, and then she doesn't, it's hard for me to, listen to her, because it's, like, she ain't projecting loud enough for me to understand what she's saying, but the choir was undefeated, though. They took me out early. If I was like,
oh, that was the richest Smallwood singer. They are outstanding.
Listen, give all of them a pay raise. All of them deserve pay raise. Everybody that's in their choir need a pay raise. Because they, when I tell you, they were singing, and then I missed some of it because I came in when they were singing Total Praise. And then shout out to Richard Smallwood. They had Richard Smallwood playing in the beginning of the homegoing service.
The
he was playing on the piano.
Yeah.
And then they played I Shall Wear a Crown. That's like quintessential black choir music right there for a funeral.
Yep. Oh,
I Shall Wear a Crown. And then they killed it. I was like, oh. Shout out to rest on the Thomas Whitaker. I think that's who wrote that song, I Shall Wear a Crown. But they were killing that. And then I looked online because I didn't know they had performed. They did more than one choir song like that. And they did Marvelous by Walter Hawkins. Oh, my God. That was crazy. But, yeah, they
also
killing.
Did Total Praise.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they did a few, like, really, like, old school, like, good, solid classic ones. Because I watched the whole thing. I watched the whole entire 8 hours of this joint. Right? I was in my house. I had cooked some breakfast. I had people over, like, we made it an event. So,
yeah,
they set the spirit appropriately. They did a great job.
Oh, they were amazing. When, they definitely had, Minister Faircon up on his feet.
and that was crazy. Like, Faircon was there all day, chilling, and didn't even speak. He was just up in the pulpit all day, just enjoying himself, really. He looked like he was enjoying himself, like, the whole day.
Yes. And the opera singers, oh man.
Yeah.
She sung, I had her name written down, I'm trying to find it now, but it was one that sung Ava Maria.
Ava Maria, yep.
Incredible. And then the one that did, Grace, Our Faithfulness, oh my gosh, she brought me to tears. I was crying. And
she's
then
beautiful.
She had Mr. Faircon crying. He was over there wiping tears. I was like, she got the minister over there. I was like, that is amazing. It was crazy. And then my favorite one was, I didn't lost the name of the song when Williams Brothers and Vanessa Bell Armstrong.
Oh yeah, what did they do?
Precious Memory.
I don't. Okay, yeah.
Oh man, and that's actually Aretha's favorite song, Precious Memories, because she did that song all the time with the Williams Brothers, mostly with Melvin Williams, but sometimes she would do it with both of the brothers. But man, and then some people was like. They don't, like, that's how I know, like, some people don't get down with old school gospel, because if you don't know who Vanessa Bell Armstrong is, then you
were like, whatever. Yeah, some people are like, who is this? But yeah.
Yeah, I was like, how do you know who Vanessa, she's getting older though, but I didn't think it was, I don't think her, like, it was bad, because that's what she does. Like, she, like, sings like that all the time. And then if you hear the way Aretha sings, she's singing, like, the way you sing that song, like, that's how you're supposed to sing that, is like that. And they thought she was just yelling. I was like, no, she wasn't. Like, she's doing the song. But man, they had everybody going into a praise break. I was like, that's what it was. I was like, they had that Aretha spirit going up for that in heaven probably. That's her song. Uh-huh. Cause she had everybody. I was like, yeah, you can't, I was like, I know they was on a timetable, but you can, when the spirit get in there, you can't, in a black church, you can't just let that pass. You gotta keep, I know the musicians was ready they was ready to play them shout chords. Musicians always ready to go into a praise break at any given moment. I think actually that Aretha Franklin's actual band was playing most.
Well,
of the,
they're called the Aretha Franklin Band, so I guess that was her backing band. Yeah.
Yeah, because I recognized the organ player and the pianist, and then she had her congo players. I recognized them first. The two guys, the percussion, I recognized them first, and then the organ players. But yeah, that was definitely her band, and then. Her singers, when they started singing Precious Memories, I recognized two of her background singers. And I think one of them was her cousin. I think her name is Brenda. She was singing in the front where the background singers, I mean the vocalist that had the microphone, I think it was most of them were used to be her singers, her background vocalist.
Got it.
But the band was killing. Then I saw Ricky Dillard up. I was like, oh yeah, they kept switching out the choir director. I was like, oh, there go Ricky Dillard right there. But yeah, he started shouting too. I thought that was cool. And then they had, what's his name? The other one with the glasses. I always forget his name. He's the one that does, man, I can't.
Martin
Tapp? No, the choir, the one that, directs choirs. He directed the choir for, Shaka Khan when she did Going Up Yonder. I forgot his name. Dang.
What is your name?
I don't think I was paying attention to the choir director's by name.
I always look at that. Kurt Carr, that's what his name is.
Oh, Kurt Carr, right. He's Kurt Carr.
He's directing the choir. But yeah, that I was enjoying like all that, and then Fantasia, I was like, oh my god, she did Precious Lord, I think. I think that's the name of the song. I can't remember.
No, Fantasia did. Yeah, she did a rendition.
Yeah.
She did a rendition of Precious Lord, Take My Hand that was mixed with You Got a Friend.
Yes.
So she did that, and then Jennifer Hudson did Amazing Grace.
Yeah, so she was off.
You think Jennifer Hudson was off?
No, I said Fantasia was, we get to that in a minute.
Oh.
Yeah, I think she was off. But I was saying, Fantasia was taking her shoes off. I don't think she was vocally off, but I had to turn my TV down because it was too loud. I know that. That wasn't even low enough because I was like, my God. I love like her voice, but I just wish she wasn't like so loud.
all the way up. She gets it out. You just gotta let her get it out like she gets it out.
Oh God. I was like, I thought it'd be perfect because I love when she like can belt songs. Like these are like, when she does tributes, it's like the perfect time, like for artists like Aretha that had that range vocally. Like I love when she can do that, but it's like, my gosh, like, why do you have to be so loud? Like, like even when you mute the TV, I could still like hear it. Like, why is it so loud? That's all the questions I have is why is she so loud? Like, I can't take it.
You gotta
so
let Fanny do what Fanny does.
No, not Fantasia. I'm talking about Jennifer Hudson. Fantasia was perfect. I'm talking about Jennifer Hudson. Like, why is she so loud? Like, I can't take it.
I don't think she knows any other way.
Oh man, I feel like she'd be showing off too most of the time.
Definitely.
Like, she knows she can go there. Like, I feel like she's like she knows she can sing, and she's that kind of singer, like, you know, like if you like got a good choir member that does all the solos in church, like she's that solo singer in church that would do the most, that got like take like a long intro into the song, and then got to shake that chin a little bit to let you know that she got a little style to it, like, she's that like obnoxious solo singer in church. That's what I think she's like.
Not the obnoxious solo singer.
I'm just saying, it's just too much. I'm still, and then I'm also being biased because I didn't appreciate like how she like completely messed up Prince Purple Rain and sung over the guitar solo. Like, I'm still mad about that for BT Awards. Like, that's like, you just completely violated that song. That is the highlight of that song, the guitar solo. And she's completely sung over it, and I'm still mad about it, but we'll go ahead. We ain't talk about that now. I just couldn't take it. It's just like, why did you ruin this? That's how I was feeling, but we go past that. But what else happened in the pastors were speaking. It was one pastor, and I forgot his name, but I was like, I know he keeps a pack of Newports in his pocket right now. Like, the way I forgot who it was, but he was preaching though. I feel like they were giving the eulogies, the other pastors that were speaking besides the one that was giving it.
Yeah.
Jackson Williams. I consider them the eulogies if you ask me.
I feel like David Barber, who is a pastor from Charlotte, who's really active in civil rights, like, I feel like he basically eulogized her. Reverend Jackson, of course, gave really great remarks. Even Michael Larry Dyson, who, I don't know if people know, he is ordained.
Yes, Reverend Dyson
did a thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really did a thing. And of course, Al did a thing. You know, so I think that everybody really, all the clergy up there, except Pastor Williams and except Bishop Ellis, who was presiding over everything and was just doing too much at all times, in my opinion, who's the one who yoked up Ariana. I feel like,
is this thing 30 minute Netflix comedy special? Like, why are you, like, I get like preachers be trying to get the levity going with it, but like, after the last 7 jokes, like, bruh, like, I'm gonna need you to chill with all the jokes. Like, you ain't gotta like put a joke in there every time you introduce somebody. And then I thought it was very disrespectful how he introduced Ronald Isley. Like, I wish I could cuss on this show because I got so many MFs and N-words. Like, I want to cuss though. I'm gonna use one of them. That motherfucking man pissed me off so bad when he was talking about Ronald Isley, talking about, the queen did it better than you did or some other shit he said. And then he said, you missed the big. He was just being real disrespectful with it. I'm like, nigga, is you serious right now? Like, who says that when you introduce uh-huh. to somebody? I was like, you was tripping for real with that bad shape up he had. That was bothering me because the light was right on it. I'm like, dude, you need to cut all that off because you ain't got no hair up there. I was like, cut that off and get a razor or something. But that dude was tripping. But yeah, I saw all the backlash she had with Ariana Grande. I didn't really notice it at first, him grabbing uh-huh. the side of her because she was so small. But I did think he was grabbing her too much. I was like, you don't know her like that. Why you keep grabbing on her?
No, he definitely was grabbing her too much.
And then the Taco Bell comment, I was like, oh Lord, this preacher right here is doing too much. I didn't see like the big like hoopla about it because I didn't see that until somebody blew it up on Twitter. I was like, oh, he did grab the side of him. I was like, why do you do all that for? But it was just like, this dude, he was just doing too much the whole service to me. Like, you was talking way too much and you, this is not your Mike Epps Netflix special. Like, you was not a comedian. Like, chill. I think after the first couple chuckles that he got, he's like, I'm going to keep doing this. Every time I answer, like, no, you don't need to do it. Like, you need to.
Yeah, and he didn't need to hold her up on, on the pulpit like that at all. Because he was walking off and he
right,
pulled
exactly.
her back. He could have let her take her seat and made whatever them corny ass.
Yeah, and then he could have made the statement.
You know,
right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what. He just wanted a chance. He definitely was being pervy because he could have, now you said that, yeah, that was definitely perverted because he could have said that while she was going to her seat. Like, you just wanted to touch mm-hmm. on somebody. That's what I'm saying, man. Freaking creepy ass.
He just wanted to be extra. Yeah.
Right, being extra for no reason. But going back, like you said, Dr. Barber, he was amazing. He said something in there, I quoted him. He said about Aretha, he said her singing was both spiritual revelation and skill interpretation. Because she was singing from the sacred place, falls from the moans and the music of the ancestors. I was like, you better uh-huh. talk that right there. I was like, that he was preaching that right there. I was like, that was so deep when he said that, and then he kept going on, and then Al Sharpton wasn't that bad either.
No, Al Sharpton was great. The thing about Al Sharpton, yeah. people don't hear Al Sharpton just straight preach often. Most
right.
people are used to hearing Al speaking a kind of preaching tone, but doing more speaking than preaching. Al
right.
can preach. He
yep.
can preach. And even this for Aretha, he almost went there. Like, he started getting a little bit riled
yep.
up towards the end. But let me tell you, when Al is just straight preaching, like no politics, no whatever, no nothing, Al can preach. He can preach
yeah.
any word.
When he said that about Aretha, he was like, when she said she's gonna go to the exchange counter when she go to heaven, he's like, what's that?
Yeah.
She was like, that's when I turn in my cross for my crown.
Get my
like,
crown.
Lord.
Yes, Lord.
I was like, he got all the musicians tuned up right there because he's ready to
yep.
go there. I was like, he's over there preaching right there. But yeah, like I said, then was the eulogist to me. Like, that dude was trash. That Jasper Williams with them hamster eyes, like the possum
eyes. Hamster
eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna change the possum eyes because that's what he had, beady possum eyes, because he wouldn't talk about nothing. But yeah, I enjoyed the homegoing service. I was just tired of people comments and oh, this singer ain't singing right. Like, can y'all shut up? And then Smokey Robinson, man, I liked how he personalized, like he was talking to Aretha, like he wasn't even like addressing everybody. He was just talking like
he was talking to her. Yeah,
that
got me. In my
I was
feelings.
Like, and then when he started singing a little bit of that song from that Temptation movie, I was like, oh, he's about to take me out. I'm like, I'm done. He's like, I miss you. I was like, I can't do it. I'm about to start crying. And then Ron Osley had me crying too. I was like, man, he was crying and everything. I was like, I felt every word he was saying. And then I saw somebody
yeah.
online say, I was just waiting for him to sing Between the Sheets. I was like, y'all need this. Y'all is not gonna make it in heaven talking like this. Like,
I mean, Ron definitely made it sound sexy.
I was cracking up.
He definitely made it sound sexy. He definitely did.
Yeah.
Because
he was trying not to cry. I think he was going into them, usually singers like that, because you get that lump in your throat when you be singing. Y'all know how hard it is when you want to cry and try to sing at the same time when you got that lump in your throat. Oh my God. It'd be like right there so you can get to you can get to that falsetto range quicker. It's easier to get in falsetto than it is trying to sing in your full voice. Because if you try to sing in your full voice, you're going to be cracking. But when he went at falsetto, because he was ready to cry, like, I could tell. I was like, ooh. I was like, he's going to have me in tears. That's why I thought
right.
it was disrespectful for whatever his name is, that pastor. I don't even care to look up his name. I think it's Pastor Ellis. But whatever his name is, for saying that. I was like, that really, that's when I was done with that pastor. I'm like, all right, you need to quit with your little showtime at the Apollo at. You was talking too much and being disrespectful. And then he said something else that was awkward, introducing Smokey Robinson, talking about, like, oh yeah, all your friends died, and he was like, but you the one that got all, you got all your hair when I was looking at all your friends. I'm like, what the fuck? Saying something like
that. So, like I said, just so
what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, who says that when you introduce, like, this Smokey Robinson, like, he has a lasting long career just as Aretha, and you gonna be just as, you gonna be disrespectful like he ain't, like he just somebody, like, singing at a funeral. Like, get out of here. I was like, I don't know why Aretha, it made me think the whole time, why is Aretha friends with these people? Like, why do you know this man? Why was he sending checks to this church? I hope he a good pastor at his church, but what he was
well,
doing at
he,
church, I was like.
So, there was a show on, was it on Wii or Bravo? On one of these damn shows, I mean, on one of these channels, there was a show called, Real Preachers of Detroit. And he was one of the preachers, and it was just him and Karen Clark Sheer were both on it. And he apparently is that extra all the time. But he's a pretty renowned pastor in Detroit because he also presided over Rosa Parks' funeral. But again, I think just like Jasper Williams, he was busy feeling like this is his moment because he's on TV and he knows that the world is watching. But I have a friend who is a news anchor in Detroit. And I texted her because she was there. And I was like, tell Bishop Ellis stop being all extra. And she said, girl, that's how he always is. She said he's always like that. But it was
I want to go to his church.
And it was really inappropriate because, like, some of the jokes he was trying to get off, they work when it's just us. But, like, we got company. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not just black people up in here. This is a black funeral, but it's the world watching. So, like, you bringing Jesse up and you being like, and we know his health ain't that good, and or making the first black president crack about Clinton. Like, we let that go as soon as we had an actual black presidential nominee. You know, just so a lot of those things for me just made me.
Yeah, I didn't get that. I was like, what is with you? I was just mad that he just turned this into a whole comedy routine every time he got up. I was like,
a bad comedy routine.
Right, exactly. I just feel like he got a couple of chuckles in the beginning. He's like, oh, I'm gonna keep doing this. Cause at first he wouldn't like that. It was, cause when he was, predecessor, like when he was trying to get, when they were getting ready to close the casket and stuff, like he wasn't acting like that.
Right.
But then that was also interesting as well, cause I didn't know it was like a full, like, casket or whatever, where it was like, I know when they did the wake or whatever, like 2 days before, I know she had like, and then she changed outfits 3 times because I was like, wait, this ain't the mask I saw in the photo before. And I was like, nah, she changed like 3 times. I was like, wow. I was like, this made me think, like, what do I was asking weird, like, I thought it was stupid questions. I was asking, like, what they do with the caskets and stuff after they've been in it? Like, not saying that's like some, like they all gonna be dead if you put them in there, but I was like, what they do with it after they buy it? Because they bought it, so I'm like, what they do with it after they?
They bury her. What do you mean? They bury her.
You said what?
It was the same casket. She changed clothes, but she was in the same casket every time.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought it was like
a new casket every time. No, they changed. It was the same casket all those days.
Oh.
So it wasn't different caskets. They just changed her clothes.
Oh, see, it looked different. I was like, oh, okay. I was like, wow. I was like, they balling over there. It got 3 different caskets every time. So I was like, that's why I was saying those dumb questions. And then I started asking more dumb questions. I started asking them. They was like, why are you asking these random questions? Like, cause I was just interested. Cause I was like, cause I thought, like, I know this is a dumb question. I don't mind telling y'all what I asked him. I was like, cause I was thinking the same thing with John McCain. I was like, can they, like, a body stay out like that? They were like, no, that's what the embalming fluid is for. I was like, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'll tell y'all it's a dumb question because that's what I was doing. Cause
yeah,
I didn't know
that's
about
why,
that.
That's why people are embalmed. And I'm sure that, like, the mortuary service after every viewing or whatever, take them back, keep them in some kind of climate controlled whatever before it's time to do it again. And I mean, again, the thing about an actual funeral is that at the beginning of service, as you saw, and this is pretty traditional, they close the casket at the beginning of service. And they sometimes open it up one more time at the end so everybody can go through and say one last goodbye before the most. Right. Actually, I have been to funerals where it stayed open through the whole service, but some people find that distracting.
Yeah, it is. Like, I think it was, actually, I went to, like, two relatives' funeral where they did it, like, Aretha's, where they had it open in the beginning when people, so they could go around. And then the family is, like, the last to go up, like, the immediate family to go up before they close it. And they say their goodbyes and then close it. But yeah, that was normal. I was like, I feel like I'm in a black church. Like, the whole time I felt like I was in, like, my family's church or something. Cause it was like, I was like, man, this feel like I'm at, like, a family's funeral the way I was looking at it. But I was like, I was just asking dumb questions the whole time. Cause I was like, and then they was telling me, like, if they put too much involvement in there that they can sit up. I was like, oh, hell no. I was like, don't tell me stuff like that. I was like, I don't want to know that. I was like, it just made me think about weird stuff. It just made me think about I know some people like that, like, they plan it like that, but I was like, man, it's like some of that is just, I just can't get into it. I was like, we gotta talk about something else because it's making me think about this too much. I was like, but yeah, we can get to Bobby Brown real quick before we go out of time. But yeah, rest on to Aretha, the queen. I'll say queen of soul because she's queen of every genre to me. But yeah, rest on to the queen. Bobby Brown, I watched both nights. I'm going to give a little bit of spoilers. Listen, if y'all didn't watch it the last two nights that it was on, Tuesday and Wednesday night, too bad. All right, I won't talk about it. Bobby Brown's story, it was a part one and part two. I saw some people that were wanting to see more of New Edition, but I didn't really want to see. Unless they were, like, integral part of his story of, like, which I don't think he was. I think it was just mostly on, like, certain things that impacted him and stuff. I was more interested in that than anything. Like, I didn't know. I think I read, I didn't finish his book, actually, because I think I remember.
I couldn't read his book. It was a hard read.
Yeah.
The book was as scattered as the damn TV movie was.
Yeah, and I think I read a little bit of that story of his friend dying when he was young, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, like, really graphic, because it was like, and then Tatiana Ali played his Jimmy's mother, his friend's mother, and I was like, she just came in, like, giving Oscar, you know, performance. And I was like, that was real intense because it started off like that, with his friend getting stabbed, and I was like, and then, when they put him, it kind of reminded me of Boys in the Hood when they brought Ricky's body back. I was like, why don't y'all leave him there? And then I was just thinking, like, why don't y'all get, like, something to keep him from bleeding? But I was like, Keelan, this is not real life. I mean, this isn't you watching a movie. So, of course, it was back in the day. So I was acting like it was real life or something. But they had his, like, they just played it out. Like, I didn't realize they were going, like, BT was going there like that. And then the sex scenes and all that stuff. I already knew about the Janet, him dating or hooking up in quotation marks with Janet Jackson, because I don't know if they were like boyfriend, girlfriend like that, but I already knew about that, but I didn't know all that. I think that some of that stuff is in his book where he said that the Jacksons didn't want their kids to be dating not black people or something like that. I think I remember reading about that, but. What did you think of that? What did y'all think of the movie in general, like in its completeness, I guess?
I'll throw it to Whitney because I've been talking a lot.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet, so I can't comment.
Right, that's all I'm saying. I don't think Whitney's seen it yet because she got. You go.
So,
I'm spoiling it for Whitney. That's all right. You already.
I mean, it's okay.
We already spoiled everything else for you, so it's fine.
So
go ahead, Naima.
Compared to the New Edition story, it felt half done. And the New Edition story took years to put together. It took years to produce, but the overall quality was better. The cohesiveness of the story was better. It just felt like a better production to me than New Edition story did. Bobby's felt rushed and it felt choppy, but his book is kind of like that. Like, his book is not, because this is based on his book, his biography. And his book is kind of like, it's not a complete story. It's more like a series of little stories. Like, this is the Janet part. This is the other part. This is this time this thing happened over here. This is the time. It's not, it's kind of disjointed. So maybe that's why the TV movie felt disjointed, because that was my biggest thing. I felt like it was a little all over the place, and I was like, what year are we in? What just happened? What's going on? And I think that production took a little bit of a shortcut because there had already been any movie. They really didn't fill in any new edition stuff. Like, they would refer to it. They would maybe give you a little glimpse of it, but a lot of the new edition cast members, one or two might have shown up, but they weren't really in there. There was a whole bunch of Bobby's life that we saw in the New Edition movie that we didn't see here. Like, we didn't even see him getting kicked out of New Edition. They didn't even really reference it. So I think
also they did in the beginning.
They might have said something about it, but like, they actually showed the whole process in the New Edition movie. I just feel like, I guess they might have thought it would be redundant. But I think there could have been some places where they pulled some footage from the New Edition movie just to add in here and there, just for congruency. I mean, for a TV movie, it was alright. Bobby definitely lying on some stuff, definitely exaggerating in some places, and definitely trying to paint himself to look as good as possible, especially in that second half, talking about the latter part of his life. Once he got clean, it was not that cut and dry. But for a TV movie, it wasn't bad. But I would have liked it to be a little stronger. And I love Bobby. So I guess the other part for me is that there's not like there was a whole lot of this I didn't already know. But I just didn't feel like, if you're putting it directly up against New Edition, which I think we're kind of meant to do, it's kind of meant to be a companion piece to the New Edition story, it just didn't hold up for me.
Wow. Cause I didn't even look at it like that. I was like, I felt like it was, cause I'm really big on plot. I feel like the worst, it ain't worse than James Brown, cause that was the worst timetable of a movie I ever saw. I can't
believe
it.
Well, James Brown was hard cause they were trying to cover too much.
Terrible.
They were trying to cover too much. You gotta fuck with somebody like James Brown's career. You gotta pick one era and just do that. Like, they were trying to do too much with James Brown.
So I was like, why they have him over this project? I was like, this is not it. I just hate, that was like, now that, you talk about a timetable that was all over, that they jumped from his childhood, then they went back to when he was in the Vietnam War with the bombs going everywhere, then they would go back to his childhood, like, can y'all like,
but you know what's
going on?
It was
weird.
I was able to follow that, and I know that was a big complaint, not to get all into the movie, I know that was a big complaint when people came out of it. I was able to follow it because what they were trying to do was show us what was going on in James's head, because James was crazy. So,
but
I understood that, right? If they were trying to show you why James was thinking the way he was thinking, why he acted the way he acted, but I could get why it was jarring for some people. With Bobby, when I say the timeline was all over the place, I mean that at various moments, I didn't even know where we were supposed to be. Like, I was like, is it 95? Is it 98? Is it 99? Is it 2000? Like, you know, in one episode, in one scene, they're playing Escape, Who Can I Run To, which came out in like 95 or 96, but then in the next scene is playing Illmatic, which came out in 94. You know, so I was just kind of like, what are we doing? So I wasn't really and we were jumping so far ahead, like we would be jumping years and years ahead of the time, and I just felt like we weren't getting a clear sense of how time was moving and just skipping over really large chunks of things. That was, again, my feeling.
Well, I was looking at, like, that era after they got married and after they had Barbara Christina, I feel like that was a timetable of, like, them basically telling the story that all they used to do was just sit up in the house all day and do drugs. Like, that's all they did.
Right.
Like, all day. And so it was a good, like, I don't want to put a timetable on, but, like, I think from, like, 94 to 99 when it picked up from part two, I feel like that time period, that's when they was on it heavy. That's when, or whenever that, when they, the six members, when they all got together on that tour,
mm-hmm.
to do that big tour, I feel like that's when they was doing drugs the heaviest, and that's when all the stuff started happening.
Yeah.
But when I was watching it, I was like, I was following along with it. I think the only thing that, I honestly don't even have a critique of it like that, because I'm looking at it, I'm thinking back to different documentaries he's done. And I was just mostly trying to figure out when all the stuff happened, like when he married Whitney and when the drug usage started, then what was that moment to where they broke up, because I never knew that.
Right.
I remember when the Bobby Brown, when the reality show happened, it happened like right after, because I remember like after the show was over with, the blogs were like announcing that they were divorcing, and I was like, oh, that makes sense. Because it happened. I was following the timeline because I remember seeing all this on the blogs already.
Well, I think that's a good point. You're saying you were able to follow it because of information you already had. But when you're looking at a work like this, a biopic, technically it should be able to stand on its own. I should have been able to walk into this and not have seen the New Edition story, not have seen a Whitney doc, not have seen being Bobby Brown, not have seen and still understood it. And if you can't do that, then it's not a well-crafted piece of work to me. And this, to me, this definitely relied heavily on the fact that people knew enough to fill in the blanks. And this was just like, we're going to tell you the parts we don't know, which was cool. I mean, you only got 2 days to tell this story, but I just feel like you still need to add some other things in there, just kind of reference like, okay, and we're at this part right now. Let's keep it going. You know, it just, again,
right.
I think it was just relying on too much for people to already know a certain amount of facts. Because I heard a lot of people be like, who was Robin Crawford? And there are younger people who have no, like, they weren't old enough to know the Whitney and Robin stories. And some people were just like, oh, so Robin's just like her homegirl who was always hanging around. And it was like, not, I mean, I don't expect Bobby to give a complete story of Robin because obviously it's from Bobby's point of view, but I mean, we really didn't have Sissy in the movie. We really didn't, and you're not going to tell me Sissy wasn't around. Robin was just like Whitney's friend who was hanging around. Whitney's brothers weren't in, like Whitney's family wasn't in it. Like, you know, her brothers weren't around. You know, her dad who was her manager, he wasn't in the movie. You know, so it's just, I don't know. It was just interesting to me. And like I said, again, the other New Edition crew was barely in the movie. Like that. Right. Seen at Bobby's mom's funeral, everybody in New Edition was at Bobby's mom's funeral.
Right, exactly. Yep. I think, you think it would have been different if they gave him a 4-part as well instead of just a 2-part? Because 2-part is hard to fit all that in there.
The 2-part was hard. The difference, one difference they did make though was that with New Edition, it was 2 hours over 3 nights each. This one, it was 2.5 hours over 2 nights. So it was really only an hour shorter than New Edition was.
What I think
they messed up was that they really tried to bring it all the way to modern day. And I don't think that was necessary.
Yeah.
I think they needed to, maybe they stopped at Whitney's funeral. Maybe they stopped after Bobby Christina died or something like that. I don't know. I just feel like they tried to, same thing kind of like with James Brown. I just feel like they were trying to squeeze way too much into that period of time.
Yeah, I get that. I was just thinking that he wanted to show like how those passings impacted him. All that happened like all in a span of like
a
1 year.
Because
his mother died, and then I think
his
dad passed
Whitney.
Before Whitney.
Yeah.
I think it was like months before Whitney, and then Whitney died, and then Bobby Christina died. After that, I was mostly looking forward to that because I was wanting to see like what happened during, because he was telling his side of the story of what happened, why he got kicked out. But if it happened like that, to me, I just felt like the whole thing from his perspective, I was trying to figure out why the drug usage, like what trauma that he had went through, the reason why he was drug usage after he got with Whitney, like, or before, like, drinking and smoking weed and all that stuff. I wouldn't know what the trauma was. And then when the best part was when the trauma he had when his friend died when he was younger, and then also the impact of, I like how they tied all that together and say that was all traumatic to him. And I was like, that's what led to the, I just feel like Whitney and I think they were mad that they were leaning too much on the love story. I was like, it was making sense. I felt like from his perspective of what he felt like the relationship was, he was cool with having that reputation of him being the bad guy in the marriage. It wasn't until Whitney, when they had that final fight where they were getting a divorce, and she like said to him, like said all this stuff or whatever, because she was mad about the reality show critics or whatever. And I was like, oh, he was done after that point. And then he kind of casually mentioned staying on the couch with, I know this is an old story, but Superhead, what's her name? I don't know her real name. I just know it's this, what's her name?
Superhead,
I'm sorry. You know, I was saying, she had a little bit about sleeping on her couch. That made sense. Because he mentioned that in there. Because he said, when he was talking to Alicia after the show, he was like, I'm staying with a friend, staying at a friend's couch or whatever. And I was like, that's when that whole, the blogs are talking about that. But he mentioned that in there. People was like, why did he mention that? And I was like, he did. I'm like, but I was just following, like I said, I already knew this information, but to me, I don't know. Maybe I never looked at it from the perspective you said of somebody like that didn't know this information. Cause I feel like he's been talking about this for years. And it was just certain things that I didn't know, like from after he got divorced from Whitney. That's what I was looking most forward to. Because I had already knew this information when he was with Whitney. I already knew all this stuff. But I never looked at it from what you were saying about somebody that didn't know all this information about Bobby Brown. But that was, I was like, wow. I was like, maybe, I was like, yeah, they could have did a better job in that regard. But to me, I was like, I liked it. I was like, this is kind of, I didn't dislike it.
I just think that you put it up against the New Edition story. It just wasn't as strong.
That's fair. I don't know. I think it was just intense. I think I was just so caught up with the, I just liked how they had like the story. I was following the story because it was certain moments. That second part, I wasn't really believing the actress, Gabrielle Dennis at first. But then the second part, I was like, oh, it was some parts I'm thinking they using like Whitney's actual vocals because she kind of sounded like her a little bit. So I was like, wait, I was like, are they using Whitney's vocals? Because she kind of sound like her a little bit. And she kind of had the mannerisms down and everything. But what do you think of like the other actors, like the person, Gabrielle Dennis playing Whitney and then just the actors in general so we can move on? I think we got enough time for a break. No, we'll just go to the topic. But go ahead.
We can break if you want.
Oh, we'll let her finish and then we go to break.
I think the actress who played Whitney had her voice and some of her mannerisms down, but I just couldn't see her as Whitney. All of the wigs were horrible and they were keeping me from really enjoying some of the casting in a proper manner. Woody is a good enough Bobby, but it's hard to really fully capture Bobby in a real way, especially young Bobby. He was so magnetic and so had so much swag. The girl who they cast for Bobby Christina definitely looked like Bobby Christina, I'll say that. And Alicia made sure that she was cast in a beautiful light because Alicia was an exec producer, which kind of made me side-eye her representation through the whole movie because she came out of this whole shit like squeaky clean. Other than that, again, as far as the TV movie was concerned, it was fun.
Yeah, you definitely made me think about it because I didn't think about it because I'm just looking at it for me like, oh yeah, this, that, whatever. But I never thought about it like somebody that never knew like none of this stuff, like how they would follow along with it. But yeah, it was okay. I think some of the performance sequences, I was like, now y'all know his voice was halfway gone during, it was like after when he was doing the New Edition reunions and stuff like that on tour. I forgot what festival it was they highlighted, but I was like, his voice was a little huskier from the cigarettes and stuff like that. So I'm like, I mean, if y'all not make his voice like so young, that's what was throwing me off. And then also the later years, just to critique it a little bit, I didn't like how they didn't make him seem, he didn't seem so older. I was wanting him to like get the more mature Bobby because he changed a lot after that stroke. I see how they was trying to make the jaw from where he had that stroke to where it was twisted, make his mouth twisted, but I'm like, his other mannerisms.
Yeah, they didn't do a good job of that.
Because he wasn't that swift on his feet. And they tried to put a little stomach on, but I'm like, nah, this, y'all should have did some more aesthetics. Like, y'all could have put that on him. Y'all had the budget for that. But, yeah, it was all right. We're going to do the, you know what, Will? We just going to wait. We're going to play that song last to end the show because we run out of time. I actually
need to jump. I'm sorry, I didn't know that I needed a lot that much time.
Oh, no problem at all. Oh, I want to play the game with you, the What's Wrong With You game real quick before you jump out. We do this with all the guests before we go. I'm going to say right now, I get a lot of interjections from the producer, so if you hear me yelling at him or tell him to shut up,
okay.
It ain't nothing wrong with that.
That's because the game is rigged.
You better not say, you see what I'm saying? You see how I tell him? That was my cold message for him to not say nothing, and he's going to say it anyway. That's why I'm talking over him, because I don't want him. He's going to say the game is rigged. The game's not rigged. Basically, the game is either or. You just pick. It's not about vocal comparisons. It's just, like, who you play more in your playlist. Like, it's like the replay value of catalog. So, the first one is Marvin Gaye or Teddy Pendergrass.
Teddy.
There you go. You're talking right. The OJs or the Whispers?
Whispers. Oh, wait, no, go. I can't even, but no, I'm lying. I can't call it, to be honest with you. It depends. I have them both on my playlist equally.
You know what? That's a good answer. Either way, it's bonus questions. It's like little bonuses around here. So you would have got it right. So that's bonus. You get bonus points for that one.
Okay.
Okay. Prince or Rick James?
Ooh, that's a hard one. I have more Prince just because he has a bigger catalog, but I find myself in the mood for Rick more often, probably.
There you go, Rick James. I think Evie would be happy about that because he'd be wanting. Like, that one don't matter. That one's a bonus, too, because they were both, like, equally on the same level, like, musicianship-wise, like, in terms of, like, multiple instrument playing and all that other stuff. But that's still a bonus one. So either way, you would have got it right. Now, the next question. I make up the rules as I go.
I told you it was rigged. I told you the game was rigged.
Shut up, Will. It's not rigged. I make up the rules as I go. And so these next ones I'm about to ask you, these are not, like, you have to pick them right on this one. That's how I switch it up on you. Like, I get you comfortable, like, oh, yeah, this is easy. Now I like the judgment starts on this one. So, okay, the first one, this is Michael Jackson specific, Off the Wall or Thriller?
Off the Wall.
There you go, you're talking right. You
that's
know how
not even
hard,
difficult.
Like, sometimes that's a toss up. Cause this has been a couple
really,
guesses.
No,
that
it
all
should
the
never be a, it should never be a toss up, ever. It's always off the
right.
Wall. Is always off the wall.
You're talking right. Okay? Ain't nothing wrong with you on that one. Okay. The next one. This is, I know this is still fresh, but we still gotta do it. But Patty or Aretha?
For me personally, it's Patty. Just because I love Patty.
You're talking right.
I love Patty. But
man, I wish Evie was on so he can hear this. Man,
but Evie knows my heart. He wouldn't have been surprised. For me personally, it's Patty just because I love Patty. But I cannot deny Aretha anything. But for me personally, it's Patty.
Listen, I love Aretha too. That's why I have it in there. But it's just mostly like replay. Like you can't sit and listen to Aretha all day unless you're 79. Like. All that heartbreak songs and stuff like that, like you can't sit. That's why Evie likes it. He like 82, you know, so in spirit, so he like listening to Aretha all day. I don't know one person that listens to Aretha all day. That's all my point is. But you pick Patty, so you talking right. You ain't get it wrong. That's usually a definitive what's wrong with you if you pick Aretha, but no disrespect.
Oh, wow.
I'm just saying, I just want people to be real with the answers. It gets intense on here. Okay. The next one, Brian McKnight or Babyface?
Face. Wait, Face is a producer, Brian is an artist.
No, Brian McKnight or Babyface. No, the catalog, like all of it, like their production, like anything they've written on. Babyface, there you go, you're talking right. Okay, I'm going to add a bonus in here. Faith Evans or Mary J. Blige?
Oh, that's hard. That was hard because Mary's catalog is so much bigger. And the thing is that if I put them against each other in their prime, in that mid-90s period, I gotta say Mary, unfortunately. But Faith doesn't get enough love in that category.
Man.
But I gotta say Mary. If I'm being
okay, let me tell you this. Who has the best debut album though? Who had the best debut
Mary.
Album?
Mary.
What? Who had the best debut album?
Faith's album is great, but What's the 411 is stronger than Faith.
Absolutely.
It absolutely is. Faith wrote and sang. That's not on What's the 411, but still, it's stronger than Faith. And, yeah, What's the 411 is stronger than Faith. But the other thing here's the thing. Faith got some jams, but if we're talking about what I have more in rotation, I have Mary's first three albums more in rotation than I have Faith's album.
That is unfortunate, because her first three albums are amazing. Man, we got to have you back on because me and E.B. were supposed to do a show, Faith Evans versus Mary J. Blige. The whole thing started, and I'm going to lay it all on the table, and I told him he better have the verbal guns out, because we go there on this show. I kind of I'm kind of disrespectful when it comes to the music debate. I don't try to be so disrespectful, but... But we'll, me and Will go at it sometime. We had an MJ versus Prince one, and it got too heated, because I said,
Well, that always gets
when those needles came. I just say stuff like that, because he said Prince couldn't sing.
Can't
I can't take
that.
It's like stuff like that.
That's
when he said Prince couldn't sing at all.
I didn't say that. I said Prince was second string to Michael Jackson. That's what I said. Second string.
Out of your mind.
Riding the bench.
And he rolled the bench, and Michael was the starter. You were out of your mind and blasphemy.
That's true.
But I determined there's, at the What's Wrong With You game that there's nothing wrong with Miss Naima Cochran. There's nothing wrong with her. I ain't gonna deduct points for the Mary J. versus, Faith. I was like, if you would have said Faith, I would have cash apped you, $225 to get you a 40 ounce. I would just, no, that would have been a consolation prize if you would have aced all of it. But you got the main ones right, so you won the game. The bonus ones, I would have cash apped you something to get a, Old English. Say hi to
that. This game is great.
Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much for coming on. No problem.
Thank
I hope we
guys.
Can have you on again when Evie's on. And just thank you so much. Where can they find you on social media?
You can find me at Naima, N-A-I-M-A. You can find us, that's on Twitter, on Instagram. You can find us at Music Sermon. And you can also find us at MusicSermon.com.
Yes, make sure y'all follow all the social media and keep up with Music Sermon. We actually going to end the show now because we got to wrap up. But we usually do a Savvy Heathen Talk, my Savvy Heathen Talk. I don't think I have one this week. I'll save one next time. I'm trying to think of something off the top of my head. I can't think of nothing. Oh, somebody gets your Keisha Cole album, throw it in the street and run it over. That's my Savvy Heathen Talk. Where can they find you on social media so we can get going?
I'm on Twitter at Afrocentric2011.
I'm sorry, y'all. I'm ignorant. I can't help it. thank y'all for tuning in to Soul Savage Radio. We'll be back next week every Thursday, 4 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And we are out, y'all. Check us out. We got to know. Thank you so much for coming on. We are out. There you go. Thank you so much.
And this is the Soul Savage Show every Thursday at 4 p.m. On Studio W The Buzz. Hey, check out The Buzz 24 hours a day. Just go to www.studiowbuzz.com.